Welcome back. Hour number two here on 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising here with you. I'll save you all of the normal things because we've got 104.5 The Zone. We've got Nashville royalty. Football royalty in the house. He's in the building, as Ron Say would say. He is Coach Dave McGinnis. Titans Radio is where you can find him. The Titans Amy and Coach Mac podcast. Coach to Coach on Saturdays with Doug Matthews. The man doesn't have enough to do. Mac, what's up, my guy?
Hello. Hey, Buck. Good. I was over in the Titan studio with Rhett this morning doing some things for our prep for the Monday night game, and that's when I came in and asked you and Lucas, because this is your show, and so I came in and asked both of you, you know, I'm gonna be here. Can I come in and do this live in studio with you? And you said yes, so thanks.
Of course, anything for you, and also anytime that we get to have Coach Mac in studio, and now I can see him. Now all of the inhibitions in front of me have been removed, so now it feels like I'm actually doing a radio show with
you. You know, we did Mac talk in here on Tuesday night, and I noticed that immediately. I mean, all the barriers are down.
You can breathe.
All the barriers are down.
It's not on each other.
I like this.
We like having Coach Mac in the building. We like having him courtesy of our friends at Farm Bureau Health Plans. Like an extra set of pads since 1947, they've been protecting Tennesseans. Make sure you check out the folks at Farm Bureau Health Plans who present all of the great Titans radio content and many of the things here on 104.5 The Zone. So, Mac, we've been talking a lot of Vols, and I know that you have been paying attention, as you always do, for the purposes of the draft, for the purposes of Coach to Coach, to the Southeastern Conference, and there's a big one in Knoxville this week.
Well, I think it is a really big game. I mean, when you really start, you start dissecting this, and Doug and I, you know, did a big piece on it this week with Larry Stone on Coach to Coach. I think what's interesting about this is, let me go to the Vols first. I really like what Josh Heupel and his staff is doing. And the biggest thing I like what they're doing, Buck, they're being consistent.
Yeah.
They're being consistent. I'm not talking about the talent level right now, because they have not really had any recruiting, you know, under their belts yet. But I've done this long enough. I recognize consistency when I'm watching a coached team. And there's consistency with what they are doing. They have got a definite plan in place as to what they're doing. And regardless of how a game is going and regardless of how a week is going, I've never been to one of their practices, but I surmise by watching what I see that they are consistently teaching and layering things. And so this to me, and they've got an opportunity with this Ole Miss game, and I think you're right, this is one of the better matched games. Of course, the interest is going to be sky high. Is there a seat available right now?
There is not.
In Knoxville? No. And there shouldn't be. This to me is going to be very interesting. I am going to be watching this game very intently.
So will the rest of the Nashville and Tennessee area. It's going to be incredible intrigue. But to your point, Mac, about consistency, because I feel like the audience hears that and says, well, that just seems like the most basic thing. And it is the most basic thing. But how much does that matter for the purposes of a team throughout the course of a season to just establish that consistency? Because I feel like you can look at teams week in and week out, whether it's in college football or the pros, and understand who is practicing what they preach in that regard and who's actually been able to execute it.
Again, let's go to Tennessee. What Josh Heupel is trying to do, I mean, you can tell he's trying to build a program. And to build a program, there are incremental steps that you have to go through. And look, I'm never coaching anybody else's team, and so not to disparage anything that's gone on in the past, but you can tell when it's uneven. You can tell when it's segmented, and you can tell when a staff is panicking because of non-success and jumping around and doing other things, trying to make quick fixes, because here's where quick fixes don't work. They don't work on a spare tire, right, and they don't work on it. You got to build a program, and that's what he's trying to do, just like this offense that he's running. You know, I think people had a conception that when he came in that this offense, I mean, I know this offense very well, you know, clear back to Mike Leach's days at Texas Tech. It's predicated on being able to run the football and put second-level defenders in conflict situations. That's what it's predicated on. It's different in the collegiate game right now because of you can spread it out because the hash marks are different. But for all of those route reads to work against the various coverages, whether you're playing against quarters, you're playing against halves, you're playing against thirds, it's easy to discern against man to man. For all that to work, your second level people have to be in conflict. And if you can run the ball, they're in conflict. And the progress that you're seeing with this offense is now the synergy between the quarterback. You know, and they're playing a different quarterback. They're playing Hooker now, but because the synergy between he and the receivers, they're starting to see the same things once the ball is snapped, what the defense is presenting them. That's why they're working. But the run game is what's working.
And they'll be without Tyon Evans reportedly on Sunday or Saturday, which is going to make a big difference for that run game.
So with that said, when you think back to some of those Oilers teams, Coach, the run and shoot offense, do you see elements of that in what Tennessee does with Josh Heupel, maybe also qualities of an air raid? I mean, but do you see elements of the run and shoot that Love You Blue was so known for? Because I feel like that gets brought up a lot around Josh Heupel.
Well, see, that's the whole Miles Davis thing, you know, and I, you know, I coached against Miles Davis, you know, when he was at Detroit. And it's similar, but here's where the difference is, Lucas. The where the hash marks are in the National Football League, they're in the middle of the field. The hash marks in the collegiate game are wider. And so when the ball is placed on a hash, you've got a country acre to one side that defensively you have to be able to disperse your people. So your route combinations and the way that you play defense, most defenses in this league, if they are going to set a defensive strength, because you still only have 11, you've got five eligible. So if you're going to play zone, somewhere along the line, you're going to play 4-on-3, and the other side, you're going to play 3-on-2. So where you play your 4-on-3 in the collegiate game is to the wide side of the field. Well, the wide side of the field combination that matches what is going on the short side of the field is a lot different than the National Football League, because in the National Football League, fundamentally, everything is in the middle of the field. And so defensively, your disbursement is different. And because your disbursement is different defensively, then your route combinations have to be different to take advantage of it. Does that make sense?
Yes,
absolutely. Well, Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio making it all make sense for us here on 104.5 The Zone. So, Mac, before we pivot to Titans-Bills on Monday night, and of course, Mike Keith and Coach Mac, Amy Wells, Rep Ryan, the whole crew will be on the call on Monday across the Titans radio network. Matt Corral, I know the draft prep across the league is already well underway. This quarterback class coming out seems to be substantially less than some classes that we've seen in years past. Is Matt Corral the best quarterback prospect that you've seen so far in college football?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. I mean, in my humble opinion, just the games that I've watched and have started to diagnose, he absolutely is. And for two reasons. First of all, he's in a system as to where he's learning how to read out things. The second thing is he's an exceptional athlete, but his arm talent to me and for you guys and for your listeners, when you're looking in the draft, arm talent is not just about arm strength. It's not just about arm speed. It's not just about ability to throw it a long way. There's a lot that goes into arm talent, and arm talent a lot of time goes into how your lower body connects with your upper body, with your throws, and it also goes into how much of a catchable ball do you throw and how well can you throw your receivers open. The better quarterbacks you see in the National Football League now, I mean, some of the upper echelon quarterbacks when I was coaching, that you coach against, that you fear, are the ones that throw. The ball is released, either whether it's zone or man, when the receiver is not open.
Right.
But they throw them open in tight windows. This kid can do that.
Yeah. He's been a lot of fun to watch. And, of course, Lane Kiffin has been able to maximize his potential there in Oxford. So let's talk about this Monday night game, Mac, because this is going to be it's one of my favorite calls. I have many favorite calls of Mike Keith and Coach Mac, but Josh Norman getting stiff-armed into the surface of the sun was a pretty good one for
him. Never seen anything like that in my – I mean, and I've been in nearly 700 NFL games. And, I mean, because you got grown men out there. These are professional athletes. But when I saw that, I mean, I about did a half gainer out of the box, because you just don't see that. You just don't see that. And plus, I mean, it's iconic. You know, and people that really follow the game know there's a penalty on that. And so it was – You know,
it was negated.
but it didn't negate the stiff arm.
No.
You can't take that back.
No one remembers the penalty.
No, who cares?
And Mac's smart. He's not on the internet like the rest of us, but the internet lives forever, unfortunately, for Josh Norman. But this is a different Bills team. They are overwhelming on both sides of the ball, Mac. The defense is allowing fewer points than anybody in the sport. The offense is scoring more points than anybody in the sport.
Let me tell you why I think is going on up there. First of all, that staff's been together a while now.
Yeah.
It's a consistent staff. This is a mature team now. Arizona's a good team. You know, I see Arizona just got Zach Ertz too, by the
yes.
way. They're making a run out. They're making a run at it out there. The thing about the Bills that to me differentiates them from, and I'm just talking about the teams that the Titans have played so far. I think the Titans and the Cardinals are the two best teams that the Titans have played so far, clearly. The Bills are a more mature team. They're a more mature team for two reasons. First of all, the staff has been together longer, and then their quarterback is much more mature. And you talk about the draft, Buck. You talk about – and, you know, I caution all the time when we're always doing our draft thing, our draft shows, to people not to be IEs, which is instant evaluators.
Yeah.
If you remember, Josh Allen came into the league and everybody said, you know, this guy's got an arm. He can throw it through the wind at Wyoming. He can throw it far, but he can't hit a barn. He won't be ever be any good in the National Football League. He'll always be a one-hit wonder guy.
Can't teach accuracy.
Yeah,
not true, okay? Not true. And so this guy's a very mature quarterback now, and he's mature to the point now with his passing game, guys, that what they have done now is they started incorporating – quarterback-centric run designs for him.
Yeah,
I mean he's right behind Lamar Jackson in the league as far as quarterback-centric called runs, and so those two reasons to me make it because they've been developing defensive talent. And Les Frazier, you know, who I've known since the Bear days, he was our corner, you know, on that Super Bowl Shuffle team, and so he's this guy knows defense, but he's also one of the most patient defensive coordinators because he will stay in a four-man front and play coverage as much as anybody in the league. And what he's done, what they have done, is they've built a group. If you're going to play a four-man rush all the time, Buck, what you need to be able to roll people. You've got to roll people. And they got seven guys they can roll now that are playing all about equal amounts of time. And so, to me, that when you marry that with a quarterback that's now reaching a maturation level that you had hoped for when you drafted him number one, you've got a real chance.
They're going to need every opportunity that the Bills give them because the Bills have been giving people precious few opportunities to find ways to beat them. In fact, that Steelers game seems like an anomaly, a really big anomaly, given the way that Pittsburgh's looked throughout the course of the regular season.
I studied the Pittsburgh game just for that reason.
Yeah.
I studied the Pittsburgh game, and here's what happened. The Bills were still trying to adjust their center guard triangle. And Pittsburgh still got dudes
yeah.
in the middle, and they attacked that, and they got the quarterback off center just enough on a few plays. And of course, again, it was the first game of the season. But basically, what happened was the Pittsburgh defensive front, especially in that center guard triangle, were able to make enough disruptive plays at times that the offense was not quite in the rhythm that I've seen them be in rhythm since then. That's what happened that game.
The only interior defensive lineman that had more pressures than Jeffrey Simmons last week was Aaron Donald. So that's going to, again, be a key to trying to get Josh Allen off his spot to make him uncomfortable. What do they have to do defensively to limit these explosive plays, Mac? Because it came not just through the air last week, it came on the ground as well.
Well, first of all, the ground thing is, you know, all my years of coaching, the ground thing is easy to discern what happens because you've only got the gaps don't change.
Right.
Gaps don't change. Numbers, it's a numbers game, and the numbers of people that you can put in those gaps don't change. Now, what does change is who's got which gap, and how are you canceling gaps? Are you going to cancel gaps by what we call flogging gaps, by literally running people through gaps? That when your linemen are set, you know, they're either set on inside or an outside shade, then your second-level people, whether it be linebackers or safeties, they've got to cover the other gaps, okay? Now, are you going to have them read before they get to their gaps, which is what you normally do, and then, or are you going to flog the gaps and then be able to overlap with players? And so the thing that happens most of the time is when big gash runs happen, like what happened to us at Jacksonville, is somebody either on the front line has gotten cut out of a gap so that now instead of one gap to cover from the second level, there's two, or what happens is as a second level player, if someone is climbing on them from that first level, they run underneath the block. When I was coaching linebackers, I'd always tell my guys, if you run under a block, it's fine with me, but here's the caveat. If you run under a block, you better make the tackle.
Yeah.
Because if you don't run under the block, then we're not only missing the gap that you should cover, we are stretching the anchor points of everybody else, and the safeties don't know where to fill. And so that's an issue. That's an issue too. And so, but that's easy to clean up. It's easy to clean up across the front. Because it's right there on the tape.
Yeah.
It's right there on the tape. There's no mystery to it. You know what that is. So you ask me how to fix it. You fix it by being in your gap and being proper leverage up and down the line. You always hear Mike Vrabel talk about building a flat wall and setting the edges. Well, part of the flat wall is being in your proper gap. Doesn't mean that you have to stay static in that gap, but you have to at least capture that gap so that everybody else can do their job. So what, you know, whatever permutations of that are happening, you can fix that. The balls that go over your head, now, is it coming from an off-schedule play, or is it coming from where you've missed the coverage, which has happened to us in the past, where you've missed the coverage, where somebody has split a coverage? Those types of things, the off-schedule plays, are the ones you worry about the most, because those then become jump ball under the hoop 60 yards down the field.
And it's not like Josh Allen can do some off-schedule plays. We have to go to break here, Matt,
right.
But I want to ask you one more question, and unless Lucas comes in here and swings at me. Avery Williamson comes back to the Titans. They put him on the active roster right out of the gate. He doesn't go to the practice squad first.
Well, he can't go to the practice squad if you sign him off somebody's practice squad.
Well, that's an important clarification.
Yeah, you cannot. Yeah, if you sign somebody off somebody's practice squad, you've got to put him on your active roster.
If they have him active, and it's unclear whether they have him active on Monday night, Mac, but he's what is Avery Williamson as a player, and is who would come off the field if Avery was going to get some snaps in this
game? Well, I can tell you what Avery is. I don't know what adjustments they would make, but I can tell you this. He's always been an excellent run defender at the second level in his whole career. Excellent run defender. Good K and D guy, which is key and diagnose. Excellent guard ball triangle reader, and he's always been able to be very, very active versus any sort of runs, you know, that you put up. You know, that's been his strength since he's been in the league, and that's what's kept him in the league for this long.
Well, they're going to need all the help they can get against Buffalo on Monday night, and of course, you will be able to hear that call right here on 104.5 The Zone and across the Titans radio network with Coach Dave McGinnis, Mike Keith, Amy Wells, Rhett Bryan, Brad Willips, Philip Noel, the whole crew making it happen as they always do, the best in the business. Mac, I appreciate the time, buddy.
I love being in here, being able to see you face-to-face, Buck. Thank you very much. Lucas, good luck to the Vols. You're going down there, aren't you?
I will be there.
Good
yes,
luck
sir.
To you. Good luck to you, brother.
I appreciate you. Now, listen, I got to get him back on Monday. Good luck to us on Monday, because I think that's going to be a tough scene.
Hey, wait a minute, Buck. Now, you've done a lot of these shows from remotes when you've been out with the Titans.
I sure have.
You've done, and so I'm sure technology-wise. Lucas, enjoy the game, please.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
All right, Max picking sides. We'll get him out of here. He's got to go to practice. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. All right, so we need a little juice. Well, actually, that's not true. We just got the juice. Coach Mac's always the best. Anytime we can have him physically in here with us, it makes me happy.
It's so much better, isn't it?
It is. It really is. So maybe we'll have to reevaluate when we have Mac on Fridays, because I'd like to do that more often. For the people, because it's always for the people. You know who else is for the people? Lebowski, who I don't know how many people know that he's an Ole Miss fan. So I'm certain that the next, minute and a half, maybe, of my life is going to be a wild ride. Perhaps I'll need a cigarette afterwards. What you got for me, big man?
I mean, I hope it's a wild ride. I feel like every time you build me up, I just take that Kia and slam it right into a wall.
Yeah,
but I will do my best. I need a preface. I'm a lifelong Tennessee resident. So, yes, I picked an out-of-state team to root for, so you're damn right I'm a hypocrite, and here we go. I love hearing Vols fans. That's spelled V-A-W-S, by the way. Call in and get all worked up on Lane Kiffin and his grand return to the land of pumpkin puke. So we're going to have a fireside chat, Vols fans, again, V-A-W-L-S. Break out the beer funnel, the boxed Merlot, and assume the position. Yes, Lane left in a terrible manner, but can you blame him? It's USC. L.A. over Knoxville, California over go-karting in Pigeon Forge. Snap out of it, UT, spelled Y-E-W. The second that man realized he was trapped in the mountains with a walk vandalizing orange-clad cult, he was absolutely looking for an out. Also, Lane, he didn't force UT to hire Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, and Jeremy Pruitt. Too bad your athletic department can't organize a coaching search as efficient as your fan base can checkerboard that stadium in prison yard attire. Lane also didn't lose to Vanderbilt five times in the last decade. Lane didn't introduce brick by brick. He didn't introduce turnover trash cans, and he didn't bring back Babushka Saturdays. So as much as UT, again, Y-E-W-T-E-E, fans want to look forward to Lane returning to give him the business, trust me, Kiffin is just as excited to look in the eyes of his ex, who spent the last 11 years getting DUIs and aggravated assault charges at a local Applebee's. Hottie toddy, gosh almighty, just who the hell are you? Old Miss by 14.
Rack him. Oh, my God. That's what I was waiting for. He's right. We've built him up a lot. He doesn't necessarily deliver every time. Maybe that's my fault. But, my God. Yes, I am now post-coital. I need a cigarette after that.
Counterpoint, Lane Kiffin did name his son after the city of Knoxville.
It doesn't matter.
But the rest of what he said about him not being the source of all UT's problems, that's all very true.
You've just taken the fattest L, and your defense was Lane Kiffin named his child Knox.
I mean, nothing you said was wrong about Lane Kiffin didn't hire Derek Dooley. Lane Kiffin didn't save five-star hearts and champions of life. Lane Kiffin didn't lose to Vanderbilt. That is all correct.
I'm honestly surprised that the phone lines didn't immediately flood with how much Lebowski just took an axe to the knees of every Vols fan who is excited for this game. Ole Miss by 14, he says. Liam Neeson. And we will find out Lucas's allegiances right here and now. Liam Neeson, do the Vols have a chance against Ole Miss on Saturday?
Yes.
Are you doing that just because Lucas is directly in control of what you say?
No.
Oh, an upset. 615-737-1045 is how you jump in on the conversation. This is perfect because Darrington has long been the heel of the Buck Rising show, but he's now cowering in fear because the Seahawks are terrible. And Geno Smith is the starting quarterback. So enter Lebowski as the wrestling heel of this particular program to piss off every Vols fan in the listening area and whomever is streaming on the app. I'm certain that there are plenty of pissed off Vols fans that want to come for this man's neck. Now, maybe even worse than they want to step on Lane Kiffin on Saturday at Neyland Stadium. And I'm here for the smoke.
Jay says, give us Lebowski's address. We will handle it with the utmost maturity.
Let's see if Bill is going to handle it with maturity. He's headed to Knoxville, and he's got a response for our dear friend Lebowski. What you got for me, Bill?
Yeah, I got a response for Little Biscuit. First of all, I got to disagree with John King. The players knew about Lane Kiffin leaving for USC at halftime of the Chick-fil-A game. I know because I was there. Team quit on him. But at the same time, for a.k.a. Lane Kiffin, a.k.a. Half Monty, a.k.a. Lane Kippy, a.k.a. his own, this is his own name, that he gave himself, trolling co-eds in Tuscaloosa, Joey Freshwater. This is a true statement, word, name given by himself. So if Little Biscuit is going about how redneck Knoxville is. Let's talk about Oxford. Chicken on a stick. That's all you're known for.
That's right.
Oh, but you do have great co-ed on the quad. But other than that, Lane Kiffin, I'm not crazy that he left the way he did, but it is what it is. Tennessee's been down. Been a Vols fan for a long time. Listened to more crap talk about Ole Miss than Little Biscuit, and on top of Little Biscuit crap, what has Ole Miss done? How many SEC championships has Ole Miss won?
I can't think of one.
How much coaching turnover has been in Ole Miss, Oxford, Mississippi, which I've been to the little podunk town. I'll take Knoxville, Tennessee over Oxford, Mississippi any day of the week, year, millennium.
Rack 'em. Thank you, Bill. Have a safe trip. Enjoy the game.
He makes a good point. You can do the Knoxville, L.A. thing, but you can't do the Knoxville, Oxford thing.
No. Well, I mean, famously, we have mocked Oxford, Mississippi for having a dirty brown lake.
And someone called in and confirmed that there is indeed a big, dirty brown lake.
It's called Sardis. And do you think that Lane Kiffin, who just came from Boca Raton and sailing on yachts in his free time, is excited about Sardis, the dirty brown Sardis Lake in Oxford, Mississippi? Listen, Lebowski has his allegiances, and Vols fans are going to react the way that they do. I love that. More hatred on this show. More, please, more. This is what makes rivalries. And this is, listen, this isn't like a year-in, year-out rivalry, but this is your biggest rival personified by Lane Kiffin. Now, maybe you don't want to give him that kind of power over you. Maybe you don't want to give him whatever it is or associate him with all of your ills, even though his is the first on a timeline of just failures and almost back and nearly there, scandal, ending, ridiculous coaching searches, McDonald's bags full of money, allegedly. So whatever has happened at Tennessee, Lane Kiffin is the first domino to fall since then. And so all of that to say that Ole Miss has nothing proud to stand on. In fact, we most associate Ole Miss with a left tackle wearing a gas mask, smoking pot that gets hacked, and the pictures are distributed on the night that he gets drafted.
And a Sandra Bullock movie.
Yeah, well, there's that. You have The Blind Side. What a terrible movie. How much does Michael Orr hate that damn movie? Because they made him seem like an idiot. I would be so pissed off if I'm certain he is. So pissed off if I was Michael Moore about the damn Blind Side. Such a waste of time. And I too have been to Oxford, Mississippi, and I will not comment on the nature of the co-eds, but what I will say to you is what happens in the Grove and at the bar that's called the library, so your parents think you're racking up charges at the school library as opposed to a bar or a club, those are the only two redeeming parts about Oxford, Mississippi. The rest of it, you associate with hookers and gas masks and, you know, holier-than-thou, Bible-thumping, coaching from a hospital bed at Liberty, Hugh Freeze. Trash. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Don in Nashville, who wants to weigh in. What's up, Don?
Hey, guys. Just thought we could transition, maybe talk about the Ole Miss quarterback, Heisman candidate. What he actually going to bring to Knoxville, how Knoxville's going to receive him, and more importantly, how we're going to stop him. Thanks.
No, it's a great question. I mean, you heard Mac talk about Matt Corral, and you've seen the way that the quarterback class this year, you had a lot of hype around Sam Howell at North Carolina. That has since spiraled. There wasn't a ton of great quarterbacks.
Spencer Rattler.
Getting benched outright in the Red River rivalry. That's the first time I've slipped up on that in 5 days since that game is played.
Have you seen what's happened in Norman since then?
No.
The OU Daily, the student newspaper in Oklahoma.
Oh, I did see this come across my timeline, but I hadn't read into it much.
A student observed practice from a nearby public building with binoculars and reported that Caleb Williams, the backup, was taking first-team reps in practice with Spencer Rattler taking second-team reps on a portion that was closed off to media. Lincoln Riley shut down media availability the rest of the day. It's been a big thing in Norman all week.
You know, I mean, this is to a much lesser degree, and not to make this story about me, but you know that happened to me with Tom Crean. I got my student credentials revoked.
Yes, you have talked about that before. Yeah.
With Tom damn Crean, now the coach at Georgia, used to be the coach of my Indiana Hoosiers. I was mocking him ceaselessly on student radio about recruiting the 47th best player in the state of Arizona. Not the 47th best player in the country, in the state of Arizona. Tim Priller, he looked like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. And Tom Crean revoked my student credential over that.
But the equivalent of what happened in Norman would have been like if you were in the rafters at, what's the venue in Bloomington?
Assembly Hall?
Assembly Hall. If you're in the rafters of Assembly Hall with binoculars observing practice.
That's
and
exactly,
reported on it. That's what happened in Norman.
I love it. I love it. Good for them. Good. Fine. Student journalism.
He got his scoop.
Let's shut it down, and now the coach is being insecure about it. Big, bad. it's just so stupid, all of it, the way the coaches react to stuff like that. Mike is in Smyrna. He wants to weigh in on the Vols. What's up, Mike?
Hello.
You're on the air, buddy.
Hello.
Mike, you are on the radio.
I got a question and a prediction.
Okay.
question is, what has Lebowski been smoking? And the prediction is 21-7 at halftime and 35-14 final tomorrow in Knoxville.
Okay, Mike, coming in strong with the prediction. One, Lebowski has been smoking whatever is being passed around and probably sold and distributed in the chat. I'm pretty sure we could get busted for drug trafficking with what's happening in our zone.
We have nothing to do with that.
No, no, we recuse ourselves, but what's happening in there, it, you know, it's...
Yeah, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus.
I mean, the chat doesn't. The chat is literally trying to buy and sell. There's trade being done, commerce being done in the Zone TV chat with whatever Lebowski is smoking. But what I will say to you is you're not holding Ole Miss to 14 points.
Yeah, it's the second time.
Listen, Mike, I love it. I love the confidence. Keep that energy. We love to see it. BDE. But also, you're not holding Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss to 14 points.
Maybe 41 points.
They literally just scored 50 on Arkansas. Like, they're not, nobody is stopping them.
Except Alabama.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah, I feel so bad for Mississippi State this weekend. I really do. When we come back, we're gonna get a Panzeca Preds Minute, because they did play last night. We will acknowledge the hockey team. And also, we have a return of another hated figure on this show. Darrington is up next. We'll do that on the other side. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. All right, the executive producer made an executive decision. Lucas has decided to forego his Panzeca Preds update because he says nobody cares. And normally I'd be inclined to agree with him, but I thought I would at least acknowledge that the hockey team played a game last night and did lose. The Seattle Kraken got their first win as a franchise, here's the one thing I'll say about it, because this is the only reason I wanted to talk about the Preds game last night, and then we'll get back to the Vols, because the phone lines are loaded if you want to get in. And I'm going to tell you how the Vols will try and limit Matt Corral tomorrow night in Neyland Stadium. We'll get into that here in just a minute. But the only reason that I want to bring up the Preds game is because they went on social media. Did you see this?
Oh, the banner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the banner?
Yeah.
What the hell? Like, what am I to make of that? Now, I'm not saying that the Titans haven't ever done anything corny from their social media accounts. I don't follow the Nashville SC account that way. But what the hell is that? Can you tell the people what the hell it is that they posted on their social media account after they lost their home opener, their first opportunity to, what do they say in hockey, to have a full barn? They squander it, not only in a disappointing loss against a new team, a team that has not previously existed, they have a win, one of one, and it's over you. But instead of just, you know, going silently in the night and letting people get out drunk on the streets in Broadway to forget about what they just did, what did they do instead?
It was a self-roast of sorts.
Okay.
Tweeted out, nothing like Southern hospitality. Welcome to the league, at Seattle Kraken, with a photo of a banner that says, gave Seattle first franchise win, October 14th, 2021.
What am I supposed to do with that? What the hell am I supposed to do with that but make fun of it? 615-737-1045 is the number if you want to jump in. 615-737-1045. Remember, we'll get back to the Vols here in just a second. But I saw that yesterday, and I was just like, you know, we talked about Dane Cruikshank, right, after the Jags game. He plays poorly. The PR staff doesn't ask him to come speak to the media. He gets out there on Twitter, and he says, yeah, I played a bad game. I'm going to hold myself accountable. It's a nice sentiment, I guess, but you're also just like, hey, man, you know, it's fine. You could do without it. But that bleep, that was such a waste of time. Buckethead tweets us and said their social media account manager should be fired for that tweet. Well, I'm not calling for anybody's head. I'm not saying that that person, I don't know if it's a man or woman that runs the Preds social media account or if it's a collection of people. But whoever is responsible for that should look at themselves in the mirror today and say, what did I just do? Why was that worth my time? And the answer was, it wasn't just not worth your time. It wasn't worth anybody's time. The time that we spent watching your team not perform up to the expectation that we have of the Nashville Predators is a different situation. And I understand that the regular season in hockey doesn't matter nearly the way that it does in, say, football, for example. But I looked at that after the game because I didn't watch Thursday night football. I watched the fourth quarter of the Eagles and the Bucks because I said, you know what? The Preds are on. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch this hockey game. I don't give a damn about regular season hockey, but I'm going to do it anyway because they're a local team and I'm going to commit to this. And I did, and that's what they rewarded me with.
They looked out of sync.
Ugh.
They looked out of sync.
615-737-1045. Jamie is in Franklin and wants to give a cracking hot take. What's up, Jamie?
Hey, what's going on?
What you got for me?
This is the first time I've ever called in. I listen to you guys all the time, every day on my lunch break. But this Seattle name is hideous.
What don't you like really, about the Kraken?
Can they cannot come up anything better than that?
I mean, listen, the NFL's got a team called the Washington Football Team. You know, I'm grading on that scale. I appreciate the call.
I like the Kraken. I think it's cool.
I like their gear. I low key thought about if I could have Amazon next day aired it, I would have worn a Kraken hoodie into the studio. Today.
They're good. I mean, they're good.
Yeah, no, they put together a good team. Turns out the expansion draft path is real in Vegas.
Well, we've seen that.
Yeah.
They got a Vezina Trophy finalist in goal, Philip Grubauer, multiple guys that have scored double-digit goals last season. They're going to push this
all right.
season.
All right. That we said we weren't going to do the Panzeca Preds Minute, and then instead of Lucas doing it, I did it. And that concludes your Preds coverage for the day. 615-737-1045 is the number. How do you think that the Vols can limit Matt Corral on Saturday? Now, here's the thing. It's currently him and Bryce Young as the best odds to win the Heisman Trophy. Bryce Young, of course, the quarterback of Alabama. Now, they're not similar players, really, in terms of stats versus team production. Ole Miss is not a contender, but what Matt Corral has done has proven himself to be the best quarterback prospect in a bad class of quarterback prospects. At this point, he's got 20 touchdowns total, 12 passing, 8 rushing. He hadn't thrown an interception, so he's making good decisions with the football. He wasn't, against Arkansas, did he really stand out to you as the star of the show? I wouldn't say so, because they did their damage on the ground. I mean, they had over 300 yards rushing in that game. So they were finding ways to exploit Arkansas on defense that didn't ask their quarterback to do a lot of heavy lifting. I mean, it's such a ridiculous stat line. He's 14 for 21. He had 381 total yards and 4 total touchdowns. So he's
94 of those yards on the ground.
Turns out he's a problem. Now, you've seen some quarterbacks with mobility. Kenny Pickett was one, but this is a different kind of athlete that you're getting ready to play. So, I mean, you're going to have to pressure him. You're going to have to find ways to pressure him. You're going to have to find ways to get him to make bad decisions. Now, bad news for you is he hasn't made one yet. He literally hasn't thrown a turnover. He's really not causing them any kinds of issues. They're not losing games because of Matt Corral. They're losing games because they can't stop anybody. So what I would say to the caller who asked earlier about how they limit him, I don't have the answer. Tim Banks has far exceeded expectations with a group that I think many people could say, you know, pretty honestly, is not overwhelmingly talented. They do have some good pieces in their front seven. They do have some people that can rush the quarterback, and they will have to find ways to pressure Matt Corral on Saturday if they're going to be able to bother him. If they're going to look at any point to get a defensive stop, you're going to have to, if not sack him, you're going to have to get him to throw incompletions.
Yeah, they've been creative about the way they've gotten into the backfield defensively. They got to do that and then some. And the crowd needs to play a role in that, too.
Let's go to the phones. Tony is in Nashville. He wants to weigh in on the Vols game. What's up, Tony?
Thanks for taking my call, man. I wanted to give you a call my shot on this Tennessee game this weekend. So for me, it comes down to whose defense is worse, because I think both their offenses are very similar. So I'm going, I know that one guy called in, he said 35-14. There's no way either of these teams score less than 20, I don't think. I'm going to take the balls in a big one, Buck. I'm going to say 53-41 and flip that script. I'm going to go Tennessee. It's going to be a high-scoring game. And, hey, let me just say to William out there, buddy, man, we got enough ball haters, brother. Not this weekend. Lucas, have a wonderful time at Neyland, and I'll talk to you all next week.
I thought he was just
Thank gonna, you, sir.
Thought he was going to tell you to have a wonderful day and not me. I was going to get upset. Here's what I'll say. I really do defensive. I think when you look at the teams as a whole, the Vols do seem to have a bit of an advantage because they're allowing 10 points, literally 10 points less per game on defense than Ole Miss is. but you have to be able to find ways to bother this quarterback. We'll continue this conversation coming up next. We'll talk in more depth about the Tennessee Vols and their game against Ole Miss. We'll also get into some Titans analysis. You'll hear from Greg Cosell of NFL Films about where the Buffalo Bills' weaknesses lie, if any such weaknesses exist. That's in the final hour of the show, which is on the other side. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.